So good morning, Bill. And we're here once again doing another podcast, which is quite exciting. And I'm really pleased with today's podcast. I've been pleased with all of our podcasts. But today, I'm very pleased and privileged to be sitting in Dinah Taylor's offices in Packer. Dinah, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And I have to declare a conflict in that I do sit on the Geelong Authority with Dinah. But apart from that, we'll have a chat. So, Bill?
Well, my only conflict with Diana is I'm married for the Cats.
No conflict at all there, Bill.
That's right. And, thank you, Diana. It's been it is great. And only last night, Mark, I was at a function in Geelong, a business club function, and Diana was the guest speaker. And I found that quite enlightening and opportune, knowing that we're going to do this podcast today. But there's a lot to talk about today, and you really have set an example for females in football, because that's been your background, and you've got a history in administration in football through the Western Suburbs, and now down here in Geelong as the vice chair or vice president of the Cats, which is a great position, and I'm looking forward to how far you go with that in the future. You just got to get the current chair to resign, and that's what's going. But there's so, as I said, there's so much to talk about. But we want to go back to the beginning, and we'll finish off today's podcast talking about your new book, which I think will be worthwhile talking about, and hopefully you might sell heaps of books.
Thank
but
you, Bill.
Let's start. So, where were you born, and where did you grow up?
Well, I was born in Baxter House in Geelong, as many of us were, and I did my early formative years growing up in Geelong and in Herne Hill specifically. So Herne Hill Primary School was where I started my education. Terrific school, and I remember that Mum and Dad, you know, kids now I think do a lot of activities. They do a lot of activities after school. There's a lot of running around for mums and dads. But I was always an activities person. So, you know, I look at what I manage now, which is very much a portfolioed career, and I actually think I was doing that from when I was in early primary school, because the only night that I didn't have anything on was a Wednesday night. That was my break night. But otherwise, I had things on after school. I was a girl guide. I was playing tennis. I was playing netball. I was involved in Young Achievers at some point. So it was a very active, engaged, and a lot of different friendship groups as well, you know. So my friendship groups, and I think Mum and Dad were very deliberate about this, it wasn't just about what was going on at school. There were a lot of activities going on, and I was involved in, so I had lots of friends, and I had lots of friends in various different areas. So, you know, and I know we'll get to the importance of, you know, our relationships and the way in which we network at a later stage, but I could see that happening from a very early formative point.
I think that's a brilliant point, because having only come back to Geelong sort of 6 or 7 years ago and got two grand kids down here, when we were bringing up our own kids in Melbourne, you know, it was everything was an hour and a half away, and you're forever in the car driving around. Now, the only difference down here with my two grandkids, who are 11 and 8, I think they are, is that I know at about 3 o'clock I'm waiting for the text message from my daughter. Oh, Dad, can you go and pick them up? I'm stuck at work. And I think that's the grandparents' lament.
Yes.
But the other point that quickly there is that what a difference it makes living in a country town. And we are a large country town. And I think that's huge. And your point was right, is that primary school and secondary school kids in Geelong play in an open competition, whereas in Melbourne they play for the school, and then that school plays other schools. And I see a huge difference down here. And I think it's a great way to get that broad perspective and make new friends.
Yeah.
What was your best sport?
So I love two in terms of talent and ability. Like, and I didn't go to the elite level in any sport that I played. But I just loved tennis. You know, I love the feel of, you know, when you're whacking a forehand over the net, and it's, you know, you're really taking the cover off the ball, and it lands beautifully. There is no better feeling in life than that. So tennis I loved, but I also played a lot of hockey. And in fact, I played hockey from, I think I was 13 through to 30. I hung up the boots at 30, and part of the reason for that was that in the adult competition, 18-year-olds keep being 18 every year, and you get further and further from 18 the longer that you're playing sports. So by the age of 30, you're thinking, I can't catch them anymore. I need to think about something else. But I loved hockey because I loved the competitive, combative nature of it. Very physical game.
It's a very physical game.
It's a very physical game. Well, exactly, Bill. And so I did develop a nice hip and shoulder, a legal hip and shoulder, during the period that I was playing hockey. But it suited my level of controlled aggression, which I think is I think we'll probably get to mindset, but sport's a great thing to really... Yep. Encourage that discipline in yourself as well.
Diana, in year 10, I've done a lot of work with year 10 students and Work Experience Week. And it's at that time, I guess, and that would apply to you and Mark and myself, is that you start thinking about subjects and what you're going to do in the future. So what were your did you have any ambitions at year 10 about did you know where you wanted to go? Because when I deal with the year 10 kids now, the girls all want to go to university and be doctors and lawyers, as you were, but the boys all want to play league football.
That's true.
So at what stage did you get some inkling of where you wanted to head?
Yeah. I knew when I was 12 that I wanted to be a lawyer. And, in fact, I made that statement to Mum and Dad at home. The topic of, or the concept of a lawyer, what a lawyer did, came across my consciousness. I think it might have been a friend's older sister might have been heading into that space at university. So I twigged into this at about 12, and it was at 12 that I made that determination. And Bill, you referenced, you know, the event that I was speaking at the Geelong Business Club last night, and what I talk about in the playbook is the why. So one of my whys is that I wanted to work hard so I could get to law, so I could get to law school, and I could be a lawyer so I could stand for people who couldn't stand for themselves, and I could provide a voice to people who needed it. And an amazing part of life for me now is that, so that came to fruition, but I'm taking a long time to answer this question, Bill.
That's all right, we're not going
there. I worked my tail off. So I knew at 12 that that's what I wanted to do, which is helpful because I know not everybody does. I worked my tail off. I, in year 12, was the school captain at Morongo Girls College. I was playing sport. I was studying hard. I did my full day. I would then go home and study from 7 till 11 every single night of the week. I would take Saturday off, but I would work all day Sunday. And even after all of that, and I got straight A's and A pluses, I still missed law by a point in Melbourne, which was devastating because that was not the plan and that's not what I set for myself. So I missed it by a point. I then had to recalibrate. I went to Melbourne went to Monash first year, did the law subject, but I needed to get back to Geelong and I needed to get back to Deakin Law School and I needed to be living at home with Mum and Dad. That was how it was going to work best for me. So I got to that point. What's interesting now, though, is that voice for people who can't find their voice or who need support. When I say that, the first thought I think probably is, you know, people from socioeconomically disadvantaged backgrounds, etc. That's actually not entirely what happens with me now. I have fellow professionals who will, friends, colleagues, sometimes people I barely know, who will come to me when they are having the worst day of their lives professionally because things haven't worked out with their businesses or the employment situation that they're in, or there's a reputational issue that they are having to deal with in some other aspect of their lives, and they come to me. And I never talk about it. It's all very confidential. But it's an absolute privilege to be supporting people in that moment yep. when they need it the most. Most of that stuff, you know, it's not on a charge basis. It's me on a support basis. But I think back to my 12-year-old self, and I've been able to fulfill what I set out to do. So that's my why, part of my why, and just professionally and personally enormously satisfying.
So you, which uni were you after in Melbourne?
So I went to Monash University first year.
Yep. How did you feel not getting the mark that you wanted with all that effort you put in?
Devastated. Yeah. Absolutely devastated.
But your resilience was to keep going.
Absolutely. And just to not give up. Just, and I quote that in the playbook, you know, Winston Churchill's never, never, never give up. That utterly resonates with me. Yep. And I just, you know, I think it's my DNA wiring, to be honest with you, plus there's some training that's gone into that post. But I just wasn't going to give up because this is who I needed to be. This was what I was going to be. So I had to find a way. And, you know, but that was the best thing because if I'd got into Monash or Melbourne at that point and at first instance, I could have got into Deakin. I did get the marks to get into Deakin, but I wanted to go to Melbourne as a range of Geelong people do and have the Melbourne experience. But I probably would have been up there for the next 4 or 5 years and life would have looked very different.
Yep.
My networks would have looked different. That might have taken me in a completely different direction.
Well, so, it's the old would have, could have, should have.
Yeah, well, and
isn't it?
And indeed.
We talk about sliding doors.
And the tipping points.
Tipping points. And your tipping point was not getting that mark, which led you then to rethink, but you kept going and you moved to Deakin and here you are today.
Absolutely.
Whereas if you had got in, who knows what the story would have been. It's interesting, that tipping point, isn't it?
In your book, and I just know a bit about your book, but and what you said last night at your
I'll give
talk,
you a copy, Bill, after we're done today.
Have I got my credit card?
Complimentary for you.
The word grit came up in some of you I read last night. I might have been on your website. And one of my favourite sayings is true grit.
And I reckon, what a great movie. Yeah. John Wayne too.
That's right. But grit and being a family business consultant and coming across the unusual and devastating issues you meet in family relationships and all the rest of it, it really is about true grit. To survive and move on. But, Mark, I don't want to go back over Diana's football history, but she did start very early on in the western suburbs of Melbourne, and you've been on the VFL Commission,
Tribunal,
etc. And everything leads up to today with the Geelong Football Club. So let's have a talk about that.
So what got you into the football club? What led
into Geelong Footy Club?
Into the Geelong Footy Club. Well, actually, go back slightly. What led to your passion about football?
Yeah.
Because you've got that passion there.
I do love it. Well, we all do. Mine was, so I love sport and the nature of physical exercise. I love it. It's part of who I am. It makes you feel good and it just resets your head. Mum and dad were Cats people. I'm fourth generation Geelong. And I used to listen to the Geelong Cats in my Nana's kitchen. In fact, I can smell her cooking now as I talk about it. So Nana was a farmer. And I could, she would be on a Saturday afternoon listening to Ted Whitten on 3GL, listening to the Cats. Yep. You guys are with me on this.
Yep.
And that is my very first memory of clocking into Geelong Cats and clocking into AFL. And it is just the most scintillating, extraordinary game. You know, most of it's, you know, exceptional talent, but most of it's played in your head. You know, if you look at the margins between win-loss margins and how thin they are. And it was the biggest game in town, still is the biggest game in town. And what I realised was I was heading into, you know, post uni, getting into work, looking at then joining the Western Region Footy League is it's the biggest game in town. It's your best opportunity to actually make change in the community because it's the primary social catalyst movement that we have in Australia. You want some, you want to get something done, you want to put a message out, you put it through footy. So it's bigger than everything else, basically, and it's the thing that captures people's hearts and emotions. It forms families where there are none, where people need it the most. So I love what was happening on the field, but boy, do I love what was what is happening off the field with the game. So when the opportunity came across my plate, there was a position coming up at the Western Region Footy League after talking with a friend of mine. I just thought, another sliding doors moment, Mark. Yep. I'll have to walk through that door.
Very good. So,
oh, sorry, Mark, just on that, a stat that came out last night, or a fact, was that you are the first female vice president of the Geelong Football Club in 163 years.
I am, Bill.
So you've broken the
glass ceiling.
Is that correct?
That's very cool. That's good for you.
Yes, yeah, the first woman to be in this role, the second ever woman appointed to the Geelong Footy Club board as a director. And it's interesting, there's a lot of talk about female leadership in footy at the moment, which is fantastic, because I love seeing that on the agenda. And I, you know, I think when you find yourself in something and, you know, you're good at it, and I think I've just got a DNA switch into footy, and you know I'm a member. You know, I started as a member. I started where everybody else starts. You know, I just wanted to make a difference. I wanted to do more, and these opportunities present. So I'm very blessed and very privileged.
And there's lots of highs and lows with a football club, because you don't win every game.
You don't win every game, and a lot happens that's outside your control. And what I also love about footy is that everyone has an opinion.
Yes.
And everyone has a right to their opinion, and that has to be taken on board as well. And there's validity in every opinion that we hear. The emotion is something, you know, as a decision maker sitting on a board, as you know, as a decision maker, one of the biggest things I've learnt about sitting on that board, well, I've trained myself to do, is just to take the emotion out of every decision. It just doesn't factor into it. So best interests of the club, best interests of the members, best interests of our people, where does this decision take us in the next 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 20 years' time? You know, all of the business skills that we have, the legal skills that I have, just all get applied to that table. So there's no liniment attraction for me in this game. I want great outcomes, and I really take the emotion out of the way in which I approach what I need to do.
I've got a quick question about that, and it's around boards. As you know, Mark and I mentor and coach a lot of business owners. And the and also networking, which you speak about quite passionately in your book, and how important networking is. And we go to various network meetings around the place. And over the next generation, well, I'm a bit old now, maybe two generations behind me, I'm always asked, how do I get on a board? I want to get on a board. Mm. Now, I have some opinions about that, and you just don't go and say, I want to be on a board. I reckon there's a lot of preparation. But what's your advice? Say a young executive, female executive, that is keen to get a board position, what's, I guess, the work they should do leading up to finding a position on the board? What would your advice be?
Yeah. So I think, Bill, because I get asked that question a lot too, and my first question back to the person asking the question is, why? Because if it's about ticking a box, if it's about building your CV, if it's about an extra point of remuneration, it's actually not a good enough reason.
Or solving a grievance you've got with that organisation.
Indeed, Bill. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. They are not good enough reasons. And the key question I ask the person who's asking the question is, you think about a cold, wet, wintry Tuesday night. if you need to go out to a board meeting on that night, are you actually going to go? And what sort of mood are you going to be in when you get there? Because everyone else sitting around that table is going to know whether you're there with genuine intent, whether you actually turn up to that meeting or not. You put yourself in a place where you get tested before you even step forward onto that board. What is your response going to be? Because I just think that's a key issue. So my advice to people is, well, what is it that you've got to offer? And let's have a look at that. So in the playbook, I talk about refining your talent. You know, what's the thing that gets you to the table? What's the thing that keeps you at the table? So everyone usually, and I know family businesses, Bill, you're the expert in that area. Now, that can be different, but people do need to bring their talent and their experience to the table. That is why they are there. So, but getting people to refine that, but getting people to articulate it in writing, in a CV, as they can form a narrative around that, that's a whole different story. You know, that's a lot of work that people need to do to get themselves to that place. And, you know, what I do is help them get there. What you can offer is critically important. The values alignment, you know, really think about that as well. That's important. The networking component in place is really important. You know, there was, I remember, so I did the AICD graduate course in 2009. In and around that period, there was a lot made of go and find a senior chairman, and you will have both had this, yeah. And it was a chairman usually. Yeah. Go and find a senior chairman, go and have coffee with them, try and establish a relationship. Well, I don't know how many coffees you blokes have had with people who want something from you in those circumstances, but those meetings go nowhere. And they go nowhere because you know exactly what the person is wanting from you. There is no buy-in or build in that relationship at all. There's a lack of integrity in that cheap transactional interaction. So my advice to people is just don't even think about that. What I do want you to do is think about where you network, what you're passionate about. You absolutely do a cold call to the chairperson of a not-for-profit organisation. Head into that. Give them a call to say you're passionate and you want to get involved, but do it for the right reasons.
To me, Diana, the key thing personally that you have to ask yourself, how will I add value? That organisation.
Indeed.
Yep. So, Diana, you're on a couple of boards. One being
just
the,
a few.
Just a few. One being the Geelong Authority.
Yes.
Which I sit on with you. How do you find that? What's your passion for that?
Oh, we're so lucky to be on that board, Mark, aren't we?
Oh, I agree.
So my passion for that is that I am, like we the three of us are, I am passionate about Geelong. And I moved back to Geelong because I wanted to take an active interest in the building of Geelong and I wanted to be able to serve the people of Geelong in some way, shape or form. So we have the unique opportunity to work with state government and state government departments, not just our planning department that we report to the minister, to Mark, but with also with City Council. And so it's a great way to form a partnership that wouldn't otherwise necessarily be there because we're focused on Central Geelong. We have the ability to put a program together which is actually going to influence the next three generations of people living in Geelong. There is usually government and private money that follows through from the projects that we are working on. And it truly is big picture stuff as well as delivering, you know, operationally and giving advice on what's on the ground. So I love the fact that we get to influence where our city is actually heading because we know Central Geelong is just a key pivot player yep. and influencer in where the rest of Geelong also moves.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's good. It's, now I'll ask you one of my favourite questions. You've heard this one before, mate. Get up in the morning. You're driving to work. What do you think about? What's going through your mind? Because we've asked this question before, and somebody reflected on it and changed career.
They did.
As a result of asking that question.
Really?
Yes.
Really? Okay. Well, In terms of the, so my drive to work is probably similar to most people. Minutes? It's about seven. So it's not a long, but I might go through the coffee shop on the way there. So that adds another 5 to 10. I've done my thinking about the day, you know, in terms of the mechanics of the day, meetings coming up. I've done that the week before, or I've done, you know, I've checked the diary last night. I know exactly what's on. So there might be a fraction of, you know, the mechanics or the logistics of what's about to happen that I might not, you know, I've got to print this document, whatever, all that boring stuff. But I try and use it as time to clear my mind. I'm trying not to think about too much because my mind, I'm setting myself, and I'm setting myself for the fight is what I'm doing when I'm actually driving in. So that strong mindset, whatever's going to come today, you can't predict everything. There's going to be good stuff, but there's going to be some not so good stuff that happens in every day, you know, at the level that we work and the number of people that we deal with. So I am strengthening my mind for that day and what's ahead so I can put my best self forward, and I'm staying in that moment.
You're very disciplined, aren't you?
I am.
Well, that's what the book is about.
Mark. It is.
It's so about resilience, planning, vision, the why. It's all in the book.
So that's a good segue, Bill. So the playbook that you've just written, what made you want to write a book?
Yeah. Well, I think we've just talked about it. And as you've said, you both of you advise people, you know, you do that on a professional and personal basis. You have a lot of questions asked of you. I've had, you know, I get those questions too. How do I get on a board? How do I get involved in footy? What do I do with my career now? And I've had those questions asked of me of people who are heading into uni in their early 20s. I have people ask that of me who are transitioning from a full-time career into the next chapter. A lot of questions asked, so I wanted to be able to compartmentalize but also structure up for people what that looks like, you know, what I know to be true about how to live a successful, fulfilled life where there is a legacy that you are leaving with your life. So I wanted to respond to that, but I also really wanted to help people with their own success. A lot of what I've done, there has been no pathway. You know, Bill, last night I put up that imagery of the mountain. I couldn't see that mountain. I had, let alone the steps that might lead up to it, I couldn't see any of that in front of me. And being able to articulate and to say to people, there is a pathway, but you won't be able to illuminate all of it at this particular point in time, but set yourself on this course and it's all going to work. And the other thing I wanted to do, you know, in talking about gender not dynamics, I do talk in the book about challenges that I have had in business and law and football, being a woman operating in those environments, the type of workplace conduct and social conduct that I've been subjected to, that many people are, that shouldn't occur but do despite your best efforts. And I just wanted to say to people, particularly women finding themselves in that situation, you know, you're okay and it's going to be okay. It's another thing you're going to have to work yourself through, but don't let it define, don't let that behaviour and conduct define who you are. So I wanted to articulate for people why that resilience is important and put some planning and structure to how they move themselves forward.
I've halfway through the book, apologies, I haven't read it all the way through. The image that stuck me was the sexism, and I think you talk about sitting in a bath.
Yeah.
And that really struck me, that yeah. How horrific that behaved. Is the yeah. behaviours better now? Is sexism
yeah.
slowly going away or rapidly going away? Do you yeah. think that diversity, it's no longer that diversity is stronger? How do you feel?
Yeah, it's thanks, Mark. And I in my business, I do a lot of workplace relations and child reportable conduct investigation yep. matters as well. So I see this on a daily basis. It is still prevalent. The extent to which it's still prevalent, we won't know. what I know is that it is not about the relationship. It is about power. It is about the exercise of power. Whether it's bullying or whether it's sexual assault or whether it's sexual harassment, you know, sometimes it can be about physical opportunism, but it is always about power. It is still prevalent. I think that the extent to which people are raising the issues and dealing with them and using complaint mechanisms, I think that really has improved. But the power dynamic in business, you know, the situations that I've been in where it's occurred, you know, I haven't been at the top of the tree, but I've been trying to move myself, you know, to the mm-hmm. to the top of that mountain. And there's been power that has been exercised over me as a result, for a whole range of reasons. And, you know, I think the other component, to get personal about it, I didn't meet my husband until I was 40, and I'm so blessed that I met my wonderful husband at that point. But I spent a lot of time, you know, not in, you know, a permanent marriage relationship. Yep. So there was also that element of, you know, single white female. Yep. And the opportunity that may present itself associated with that. I think that that was part of what was associated with me. So that was an additional dynamic, in addition to putting myself in sometimes the most challenging of spaces, whether that's law, business, football, and those were the dynamics that I had to manage. And you know, it does get on top of you. You know, you do need to take those quiet moments for yourself and those healing moments for yourself, and find out how you're going to move your way through. But there's always options, and that's when you need to rely upon your inner sanctum to help you with that.
Just on your mountain, there's always the chance of avalanches and snowfalls, and you get whacked. You really do.
Indeed,
get whacked.
Indeed, Bill.
Like living proof of that, and I'm sure you are, Mark. But this is true. Your grit. This is its word again.
Yeah.
But, Mark, what I've summed up all of this, and I did pick up this word last night when I was doing some research. That's why I only had two glasses of red wine when I went there last night, is that you are described as a trailblazer, not only in Aussie rules industry, but for women in business. And I think that sort of sums up what we've heard today.
And Dinah will hate me saying this, but she has a fantastic reputation around Geelong. Mm. There's lots of people that talk about you with awe is probably the word I'd best describe it, but let's not embarrass you any further. So the playbook, available from your website?
From my website, www.dianataylor.com.au, from the Cat Shop, and also the wonderful Barry and Keith Fag down at Fag's Mitre 10. It's available through Mitre 10. Thank you.
And I've read half of it, and yeah, it hit some as I was reading through, so I will finish it. So, Diana, thank you. Very lovely chat.
Bill? Yeah, thank you for being so honest. And I guess the only thing that puzzles me at the end of all of this is, when the hell do you get time to unwind? Thank you, Diana.
Thank you so much, Mark and Bill. It's been an absolute privilege, and I've loved our chat today. Thank you.